Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Berko and Brentley with you. First full week of February. So Brentley, I think we can officially say college golf is back. Spring season is underway. We've already got some results in the can, some big tournaments upcoming in the next few weeks. And we'll sort of take a little bit of a deep dive looking at the Power Five conferences to see maybe what teams are positioned nicely 3 months away from the NCAA championships or those that we might have some question marks for at this point of the season.
And we got results and we already have a little bit more controversy. You know what, Berko? We both had some plans later today. We pushed for this recording just to try to get it in. I thought about changing up the format just like they did out in Palos Verdes, going from stroke play to match play. What did you think about that? Is that okay in your book? Try to beat the weather, play match play instead of stroke play, protect the ranking a little bit?
I get it, because the weather, as we saw in California, was awful. You try to find a way, as you can probably make the argument, this team in a regular season event, excuse me, this tournament, probably brings in teams from all around the country more than any other tournament. So you want to try to maximize the opportunity, but then it's that ongoing conversation, and you just touched on it. Stroke play, match play, the influence on rankings or lack thereof. It's not 100% perfect science. Some, I know, were not thrilled. Others probably looked at it as sort of a bonus chance to play some match play. I don't know. You can start maybe selling me on the fact we might need to get closer to some standardized scoring tournament formats, but as long as the NCAA championships and now some conferences are moving to match play, you're just not going to get it. It doesn't exist. And well, I think you and I are supposed to be the knowledgeable ones, but I don't think you can.
Who said that?
Well, the three fans we have, right?
Yeah.
I don't think you can work both sides of the fence and feel good about it across the board. I know the feedback from some of the coaches, they weren't happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, well, hold on one second. Let me read a couple of these Josh Brewer tweets, the Georgia women's coach.
Yeah, I was teeing you up.
So, you know, he was the one that's kind of been out front, as he is on many of the issues, 500 rule as well. But I'll just read this one. He says, so many questions about today. One, can anyone let me know if special approval must be granted to change from stroke play to play match format? Two, was our new ranking system contacted to explore pros and cons of decision? New tweet. On the surface, it sure appears that rankings had to be part of the decision since match play has less variance. Oh, to be a fly on the wall of that decision. So Berko, a few tweets followed after that, some clarifications. I actually partially agree. I think that clearly this decision was made more so because of rankings and the worry that, you know, we're in a really tough field. We could finish 15th or 16th and only get 18 holes in. What's that going to do to our ranking? I think there was more of that than weather, because I mean, they were still there in the thick of things when things got nasty on Sunday, and it's not like they were trying to beat the weather and get out early. So if you can play, I think they got in three rounds of match play. That second round they had to kind of cut short. But they were able to get in some golf. I think you could have played a 36-hole day without a practice round on Saturday. And if that's your tournament, we just had one of the top men's events in the fall only get 36 holes in at Olympia Fields. And we didn't have a lot of coaches complaining about that. So, yeah, I mean, controversy, you know, we put that in quotations because it is college golf. It's really not that big a deal. But I do think it's interesting in terms of standardization. Having a certain percentage where you can play match play, but if you play more than that, it's not going to count. Maybe it's 85% have to be stroke play, five count four, at least 36 holes, at least six teams in the field. As you can see, I've been thinking about it a little bit, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do end up counting and how their rankings are affected after this.
Well, and then you just said that, and it made me think about the fact we just had a signature event on the PGA Tour shortened to 54 holes. Well, obviously, the Monterey Peninsula, Pebble Beach area was devastated by that storm. It's an outdoor sport. Again, I don't think you'll ever get everyone in agreeance. But the fact you just rattled off some potential scenarios to keep people happy. You know, maybe you need to be at the convention next year, not as somebody in the media, but someone sitting down saying, here's a way we can fine tune it. Different from the PGA Tour, you're talking about people that don't have class, don't have days of competition, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know what, it's February, and I think it fits perfectly for the roller coaster ride this college golf season has been in terms of rankings, transitions to different scoring, et cetera. And you know what? Come May, I feel like all that will be forgotten when we crown national champs and likely two of the better teams, one from the men, one from the women, will ultimately win a national title.
I like that you said of the better teams.
Yeah. The best team usually doesn't win. And we can argue that till the cows come home. It happens in March Madness. It happens in every sport. But that's another podcast and discussion with other people to get fired up. But there were some results for the ladies. Puerto Rico. How about Arkansas? Final round, 12 under par, jumping up three spots in the leaderboard. It had SEC flavor. Arkansas, LSU, Auburn, Texas A&M, 1, 2, 3, 4 on the leaderboard. And it's a credit to the Razorbacks. You know, we were at their event in the fall, and you're like, okay, where are they going? The pieces, are they all there? And maybe this performance in February shows that don't overlook them. They're good. They could be in the mix come at least SEC championship time and perhaps beyond.
Well, I'm just going to read this line that I had in my spring preview, Berko. And first off, Arkansas women definitely made me eat crow. I think I was very leery if they were really the third-ranked team in the country. I thought that playing their home event in the fall at the Blessings and playing well, but whipping up on some good teams there, I thought that kind of inflated their ranking. Well, now I'm very convinced that they are the third-ranked team in the country, and I'm trying to find out what I actually wrote, because I wrote something that probably is going to come back to bite me, which is usually what happens. Oh, here we go. Just like its freshman, Arkansas opened its fall second first, but the win came at home and the Razorbacks beat just one team at the Stevens Cup. Don't get us wrong. This is an SEC title contender, but perhaps a number three national ranking is a little too high. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Bulletin board material for the Razorbacks. They step up in Puerto Rico. UCF Challenge, not far from us down the road. In the Central Florida area, North Carolina with the win over Kansas, Miami, UCF, Northwestern, rounding out the top five. And I'm always intrigued by Northwestern each and every year of what Emily Fletcher has put together, you know, seeing if they can get to that finish line. I was very bullish on them at Greyhawk last year at the NCAA championships for maybe a team that was being overlooked, but you know, I always think when you get that, and I hesitate to say second tier, but the teams that are theoretically ranked 8 to 20, who can do something? Or can somebody outside that top 25 make a move and build a platform that can hopefully spring them forward in the coming weeks and months? That's the intrigue I get from early in this season, because you know it, I know it, those that listen to us should know it or have an understanding of it. February to April is going to go quickly. I mean, we're 2 months away from conference championship start. I mean, I always thought, like, this is fast, it's furious, solidify a lineup for the most part and start putting the foot on the gas.
Speaking of solidifying a lineup, how about Texas Tech? They get the medalist and Lauren Zaretsky, and they finish tied for 14th. That's really tough to do. So Red Raiders come out in the spring, some good, some really good, some really bad. Certainly that's going to be a finish that they're going to look back on and not be too pleased.
Collegiate invite, Guadalajara, FSU. Nice way to kick things off. Their lineup coming together. 10-shot victory over Tennessee, Georgia, SMU, Virginia Cal, rounding out the top seven. And I know the Seminoles have been a team you keep sort of looking at the last few years of, is it enough? Can they get it done? They've been knocking on the door, to my point, a little bit earlier, a nice way to kick things off and maybe set the tone as a squad that will make some noise past conference championships.
Yeah, this was expected for Amy Bond and the Seminoles. In the fall, they didn't have Mirabelle Ting, who was the great Augusta transfer. She was still trying to get eligible to compete. She made her debut for FSU, and they get it done. And Charlotte Heath didn't even play all that well. So when you have those two players, and of course Lottie Wode, who's a first-team All-American type player, when you have those three at the top, it doesn't really take much after that. And I think Amy Bond noted that coming into the season, and she knew that if they didn't have Mirabelle right away, things would look pretty sketchy, and they had in the fall, but this is more of the team that we're going to see from FSU throughout the rest of the season.
Some early results in from the men's side of things, the NIT out there in Tucson and in that area, and I always felt like that was the one that started, you know, January 30th. It was always seemingly just a day or two in front of others to kick things off. New Mexico, nice win, 1-shot victory over Arizona. Arizona State third. Stanford, 18th, without Michael Thor Bjornsson in the lineup. Let's start at the top. Kudos to the Lobos. Arizona, the last year or two, have really become a fixture, a top 15, a top 20 team, when you could make the argument a few years ago, hey, head coach Jim Anderson, when are we going to see this team maybe move back to where it was for so long? And then Arizona State, they're the bad penny. You can't shake them. Every year you think, oh, they've lost too much, is when you ding enough. Matt Thurman's team, front and center, even though they finished third, they're seemingly in every event they play in.
Yeah, there's some guys that they left home for that tournament who could be starting on just about every team in the country, or at least every team outside the top 10. In the country. You mentioned Winnie Ding, runner-up finish right off the bat in college golf, missed the fall because of some national team obligations with China, played a lot of tournaments, just wasn't smart to throw him in the mix and try to get him caught up and in the swing of things with school and practice and a new city to live in and all of that. So he comes out and plays like the top 10 amateur, top 15 amateur that he is. A&M at sixth, average performance. I expect more as this young team kind of gets their feet under them. I expect more out of them. And, you know, without Thor Bjornsson, again, he's going to be back. I talked to Conrad Ray last week, and he said it was just too quick of a turnaround just in terms of getting him back from that back from Dubai to play in that event. Wanted to hold him out. He's going to be back in the lineup in Hawaii, so expect you know, they can't afford too many more of these 18th place finishes, Berko, because as we know, the 500 rule, we'll start talking about it here pretty soon.
Yeah, hey, you know what, it was great to see him a few weeks ago. DP World Tour, played well. Let's hope the back and the issues and the injuries, that those are behind him talented player. And I think when healthy, you could easily say he's in that top class of Sargent and Dunlap, and people might think we're crazy. But you and I know better that when healthy, Thor's as good as anyone we've seen in the collegiate game over the last
few
years.
He's fourth at the Travelers as well a couple years ago. So he's got game.
Yeah, he certainly does. Defending national champs, Florida Gators, a victory at the CBEST Invitational to get things going. Obviously, their lineup very different than when they won the trophy a year ago at Greyhawk. And J.C. Deakins talked to both of us, their head coach. We're going to have to work. We're going to have to get these guys moving in the right direction. But they had good moments in the fall, a good way to start the spring. Now, maybe the schedule isn't as difficult as it would be in years past. But you know what? That's good coaching. That's being aware of the situation, trying not to get in a position with the 500 rule. And if it's not this year, to try to build a lot of those young players maybe into a magical run a season or two for now.
Yeah, I thought this could have been almost a trap tournament. We talk about trap games for teams, and this could have been a trap tournament. Not the toughest field, but familiar territory. Conditions are really tough. They ended up winning at 2-over. For a young team, I mean, these are the type of tournaments, I think, where you could easily go here, and even though you're expected on paper to win, you could finish 5 or 6 before you know it. But they go in and they have 7 players finish in the top 15. A slew of those were playing as individuals. So that just kind of shows, like, the Gators have a lot of pieces. They're just very green. Really, the pieces that have shown up so far are not the ones that we really expected. Like, John Dubois has been struggling. Parker Bell, who made the run at Cherry Hills at the U.S. Amateur, he hasn't been playing his best. And so other guys have kind of stepped up. Luke Poulter's been, I would argue, he could be one of the one or two MVPs on this team, just in terms of maybe what he was expected to do when he first signed to what he's doing right now. This is probably, I think, for Florida, this CBEST win is probably feels better than any other in the past at that tournament, just because of the circumstances.
Pepperdine had their event, Southwestern Invitational, the Buckeyes, a one-shot win over UNLV. San Diego State, UCLA tied for third. Other things that jump out, Wake Forest eighth, Cal ninth, and Pepperdine 11th. I sort of wondered what Shipley would do coming off that U.S. amateur run. You know, Maxwell Moldovan can play first, second team, All-American caliber type player, but that could be a nice 1-2 punch for the Buckeyes to sort of monitor. But I want to tip my cap to UNLV, second year head coach, JPA Bear, getting the Rebels to a place. You can make the same argument with UCLA, Armin Kirikosian, second year leading the Bruins. I like it. I like seeing some of those blue bloods, if you will, finally returning. It's one tournament. Don't want to go crazy, but they're in the mix. They're trying to win things, and that hasn't always been the case. And gosh, on the flip side, Pepperdine's in trouble. Mm-hmm. Pepperdine is in a big spot. You can argue their last 3 years at the NCAA's Greyhawk. I mean, they rival just about any three-year run we've seen from any program since the switch to match play. But that lineup is, it's got some holes. There's work to do for head coach Michael Beard.
Yeah, I think William Walsh is going to be one of those players that I think could be pretty special. The time's just not right now for this team. They're really young. I've talked to Michael Beard a few times this season, and I think it's worth noting, though, that he is enjoying the challenge. Yeah, it stinks to finish 11th at your home tournament. But you know, sometimes there's some value in getting some young guys going through a lot of adversity, and they've had a lot of it, not just on the course. So, this has been an interesting, but I think fun year for Michael Beard in that sense. And you mentioned JP and Armin. How about that 2022 hiring class, with Blaine Woodruff also Pepperdine assistant going to Chattanooga? Those three teams, Chattanooga probably being a little bit ahead of the other two, but those three teams have really turned things around. And it'll be interesting what JP does with this LSU job you know, his name is certainly going to have to be on that hat. But for right now, a heck of a job he's doing at UNLV.
For sure. And we root for some of these guys. We're allowed to. We know them. We're friends with these coaches and players. So you want to see them do well as he's jumped into the head coaching department in college golf. Some quick spring preview hits as we take a look at the men. We'll stay there with the ACC. Is Christo Lamprecht now the player of the year favorite since Nick Dunlap, now a professional after the win at the Amex? Certainly with the fall, you would have to put him right there. As if it's a Heisman type situation, he'd get the invite to New York right now. And FSU back at full strength. Another team sort of like their counterparts, the ladies from FSU. They knock on the door at Greyhawk in the postseason and just trying to get through the other side. And then you look at Wake Forest, too many inconsistencies from my perspective for the Demon Deacons.
Yeah, and that starts with their star player, Michael Brennan. I thought he had figured out things with the putter last year, had come out last spring, really played well, ended up qualifying for the U.S. Open as well, but the inconsistencies have really plagued him. Some other teams that I'd kind of tabbed as potentially having good years. Virginia, obviously coming off a quarterfinal appearance last year at the NCAA championship. Ben James has been good, but not great. But maybe the South Beach International Amateur victory will spur him on. And then Duke was a real sleeper team of mine. They didn't finish outside the top five this fall, but they won their home tournament. But maybe not quite the schedule. They're going to start ramping things up. I will point out just one top 10 combined from Kelly Chin and Brian Kim. That simply can't happen if Duke wants to make the NCAA championship. But Berko, do you have a pick in this conference? I mean, I think we're both pretty high in the number one team in the country, North Carolina. But let's just say if not North Carolina, then who?
I'll say FSU.
I was going to say FSU too. I think we haven't seen the best of them yet.
Yeah, but as you said, the standard sort of with the Tar Heels. But a lot can happen as we pivot from the ACC to the Big Ten. Illinois has had a stranglehold on the conference.
Basically, eight straight, going for nine. Years.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I think it's once in the last 14 or 15 years they didn't win the Big Ten championship. We just touched on them. Keep an eye on the Buckeyes. Can the Shipley-Moldovan duo push them to maybe put a little pressure on Mike Small's team? No disrespect to anyone in that conference. Illinois is arguably one of the 5 to 7 best teams over the last 15 years in the nation. So you're not going to stumble into finding them ill-prepared to win a conference title.
Yeah, this could be one of the, at least on paper, one of the weaker teams when you lose two first-team All-Americans, Tommy Cool, Adrian Dumont, Dave Chisart. But also individually, I think that could be the race that is really interesting at the Big Ten Championship. We talked about Shipley and Maxwell Moldovan. Keep an eye on Purdue's Herman Sekne, Norwegian. Could be the next great player out of that country behind Victor Hovland. Of course, Michael Miyasoth over there at Arizona State. But the Herminator, he's been pretty good these last 12 months or so. So keep an eye on him. And perhaps with him at the top of the lineup, if he goes crazy and catches fire, don't count out Purdue, perhaps pulling off what would be a historic upset.
Yeah, head coach Rob Bradley's done a very nice job for the Boilermakers for the better part of the last decade. You go to the Big 12, Texas, youthful, talented. Oklahoma seemingly goes 6, 7, 8 deep virtually every year out there. And Baylor, how about Mike McGraw? The Bears starting to sort of creep up after a couple of lean years in Waco.
Yeah, that to me, I think Mike McGraw has to be among the two or three favorites for Coach of the Year. I think they give out that award still. The Dave Williams Coach of the Year award, is that still
correct?
A thing?
Yes, it is.
You know, he's certainly got to be in the running for that, at least right now, mid-season. Texas is a team I wanted to touch on real quick. Perhaps, you know, we talk about Arkansas women ranking potentially being inflated, which as it turns out, it wasn't. I think on the men's side, Texas could be a little bit inflated by match play. They played six matches, and then in their stroke play events, very tough tournaments for sure, but sixth or worse. So this is a team that I think behind Christian Mosh, there's still a lot of question marks. There's a lot of talent, but as you said, a lot of young guys, a lot of little shavers. So I think Oklahoma ends up getting it done because Luke Kluver was a guy who I had written off. I know a lot of people had written off last year when he went to Norman.
Didn't play Kansas. A lot.
Didn't play, didn't crack the lineup. You probably wouldn't count him as one of the six or seven best players on the team last year. So he wasn't even close to getting into that postseason lineup, at least in my opinion. But this year, I mean, he won in Hawaii to cap the fall. He went undefeated as well at the Big 12 match play. This is going to be a guy, I think, in Luke Kluver that plays some big-time rounds for Ryan Hibble in the Sooners, and he's going to be in the mix. He could even be in the mix for a conference or a regional individual title. He's playing that well. Andrew Goodman, you add him to the mix. Ben Lorenz continues to play well. The potential is there for Oklahoma to be an NCAA champion. I really think that you could probably call them a little bit of a sleeper. But in terms of potential, when you look at these guys and you look at what Kluver has done, these guys are going to be in the headlines as we get into April and May.
We touched on the Pac-12 with Thor Bjornson back. Stanford work to do when Yi Ding part of the lineup at ASU. So we can sort of just glance past them as we sort of broke that all down. And then the SEC, Caleb Surratt, no longer at Tennessee, part of LIV Golf. We referenced last week, Nick Dunlap, now a PGA Tour winner. He's a professional. So two of, call it eight, 10 best college players now playing professional golf. They happen to come out of the same conference. And if it's not North Carolina as your number one team in the country, then it's arguably Vanderbilt. Can anyone challenge them? Yes. Will anyone challenge them? I don't believe so.
I think the Auburn Tigers might have something to say about potentially being the best team, but we will find out here in a couple of days, Berko. In Hawaii, the Armorari, Auburn and North Carolina going toe-to-toe. I actually do think the Tigers, in years past, yeah, maybe they've grabbed that number one ranking and we've kind of scratched our head like, maybe they're not quite the best team in the country. They're kind of in a similar position, but I really like this team. We talk about and some of these other teams that we've mentioned with like Ohio State where you have really two good players at the top of the lineup. Auburn's got this three-headed monster at the top with Brendan Valdez, Jackson Koivin, and J.M. Butler that rivals just about any team in the country when they're on. And I think that includes North Carolina and Vanderbilt. You point out just Valdez and Koivin, who the freshman's already up in the top 15 of the World Amateur Golf Ranking, but they had 10 top 10s in the fall. And Auburn won three times. The deepest team in the country, I think, or at least one of the two or three deepest teams. The interesting aspect about them is they made the final of the SEC championship in 2019. They haven't even made match play at SECs each of the last 3 years. However, they have been top 10 two of the last three at nationals. So this is a team I think that maybe in the past has battled some ups and downs. It's been nothing but up, and I think it's going to continue along that trend. I think Auburn is going to give Vanderbilt a run in this conference, and they might even win it. I'm not ready to pick them quite yet. I think I picked Vanderbilt in the written aspect of this preview, but I'm going to take that off the board and see a little bit more golf first before I make an official prediction. You got anybody?
I know the lineups are a little different, but I've fallen prey to great fall seasons in the past from Auburn for springs to be indifferent.
So hey, that's fair. Very fair.
I've got to see them run through the tape and do that. Now, Vandy's the standard, and it's not a knock on Bama, LSU, pick anyone else, Georgia. I think Vanderbilt's in a different class, and the fun part is we get to watch it play out over the next 3 months and change. From the men to the women, ACC, boy, it just feels like Wake and FSU right there jockeying for position. Obviously, Wake still seemingly loaded with talent. Not much changes. And then Duke, they were the standard for 25-plus years. You know, I feel like one of those three teams is a very safe bet to be the ones, you know, at the top of the league here in a couple of months.
Yeah, a little bit of a gap rank, at least rankings-wise, between Wake and the rest of this conference. But I think it's a little bit closer. Wake Forest lost a couple of really great players in this program's history. Lauren Walsh, Amelia Miliaccio from last year's NCAA championship team. They replaced them with two freshmen. Macy Pate, though, has been unbelievable. She's got four finishes of T12 or better. She's been a real star when Rachel Keene hasn't quite been firing on all cylinders, at least to start the fall. She's certainly found her groove of late. So Wake is still the favorite. We mentioned Florida State getting Maribel Ting. That's huge. I'm not sold on Duke. I still think that for a lineup that is that lean, which Dan Brooks historically has done, I just don't quite know if you have that superstar that they've kind of relied on in the past. I know Phoebe Brinker has won or was one of the four winners at the Annika individually, but I just don't quite know if she's capable of carrying the load. I think they're going to have to get some help throughout that lineup to kind of be a factor. Virginia's kind of been a puzzle. They didn't play too well at their first tournament of the spring, finished sixth. Clemson, they lose their best player to the pros, and Savannah Grewal. So perhaps they're due for a little bit of a regression from that 15th ranking. So I think it's Wake Forest, Florida State being probably the team that gets into that match play final at the ACCs.
Big Ten, we sort of touched on Northwestern, very similar to Illinois in the men. Emily Fletcher's team sort of setting the standard there. Maybe is it Michigan State or Michigan? We've seen Illinois throw their name into the hat, but you know, you always get the sense that Northwestern sets the tone for the women in the Big Ten. So we'll sort of assess that as they're still freezing in most of the part of the country. So, you know, they try to get out of the Midwest to get some reps under their belt. And then the Big 12, UCF, a strong debut, Baylor struggling. What is Texas, Oklahoma State bringing to the table? I feel like that one is a variety of ingredients that you can throw in the air and say, all right, which one works right now at this point of the year?
I think adding those four teams from the American Conference, when we talk about UCF and Houston, and Cincinnati and BYU. BYU wasn't American Conference, but you add those four teams, and I think the Big 12 championship in women's golf, because of in the years past the lack of that extra team, it was a real lean event. It was kind of just Texas, Oklahoma State, and really that and Baylor for the most part. TCU's kind of been in there, but I think this adds a lot of depth, and this could be one of the more interesting conference championships of this spring. Texas, a couple freshmen playing really well. Pharaoh, Keith, Lauren, Kim, arguably been their two best players. UCF, we talked about their freshman, Molly Smith. She's just been great. She's really fun to watch too. Kind of wears the flat bill and really mashes the ball. They have the depth. I think that they should definitely be taken seriously. I picked them to win the conference in a huge upset. And that's just not a homer pick. I know I went to UCF. I really think like there's going to be upset somewhere. And if there's an upset, it's going to be in this conference. Oklahoma State played fairly well to open their season in Puerto Rico, had a top five there. They're still in the mix as long as Madison Hinson Tolchard's still hitting a golf ball for them. You mentioned Baylor's struggles. I mean, this might be the most surprising downfall out of any team in women's golf. When you look at the talent that Jay Goble has recruited, it could just be, you know, just the fall's a pretty quick season too. Maybe they just didn't have it. So I'm very interested to see how the Bears turn it around because they cannot afford it. I know there's no 500 rule yet, but rankings wise, they might not even get it at large at this point. I mean, they're 12th, 14th, 12th. And then they went in Hawaii. Weaker field, maybe that's that spark that they need to turn things around.
Pac-12, UCLA seemingly back after a couple of down years from the point of the standard they've had for two plus decades. And then we know Rozang is no longer going to treat us to each and every time out something memorable. How would you grade the Cardinal from the fall to what you could expect? And are the Bruins for real? Or can ASU make a run? And seemingly every second or third year, the Wildcats of Arizona pop up and make match play at the Nationals.
I think you have to give Stanford at least an A. I don't give out too many A pluses, but I don't know if either you or I expected this type of performance. Like, we knew they were going to be good. I don't know if they maybe second in the country was what I anticipated, but the freshman, Paula Martin San Pedro, she's been, I think, 13th or 15th or better in every single start. Actually, she hasn't been worse than 7th in a single start. And she went 3-0 in her match play events too in the fall. So she's been a star for them. Rachel Heck hasn't played all that well. She's outside the top 250 in the rankings. But Kelly Hsu, 4 top 15s, kind of that X factor. This is a really elite team again, with or without Rozang. Would you ask UCLA for real? You know, I'm not going to go and say that they're fully back yet. I know they won a Windy City tournament that was absolutely loaded. They got 5 starters almost ranked in the top 100 or better in Mark Brody's rankings. They just haven't played that much. The sample size is very small. So I still think they're the second best team in Los Angeles. I think behind Catherine Park, USC has a chance to do some really special things. The one team that I am concerned about, though, you mentioned Arizona State. I think those teams, they're very young. They could go either way, but I think they'll both be fine. But Oregon is a team that when you lose Brianna Chacon and the type of player that she's been for them for the past 3 or 4 years to pro golf, she decides to enter her name into Q Series and forfeit her remaining college eligibility. But without her, I know Kiara Romero is a stud, and she was one of those winners at the Annika. But you know, that's a big player to replace for a team that I don't know if they had that much depth to begin with. So it'll be interesting to see how Derek Radley kind of rallies the troops and gets the Ducks, you know, back on a positive momentum swing after losing one of their best players.
Quickly to the SEC, Anna Davis now on a college campus at Auburn, LSU. The Big Three are there, but the Big Three aren't playing well all at the same time. And gosh, Florida looks to be kind of legit. You know, I think you could say they are a top 10 team, and they've got some depth, they've got some talent, and they really haven't slipped up to this point.
Yeah, 3 wins is 3 wins, right? No matter what tournament you're playing. I mean, it's tough to win.
It's all about winning. It's all about winning.
Yeah, and senior Maisie Filler, 2 wins individually as well. I'm with you on the Gators. I mean, we haven't seen them at the NCAA championship since 2019. I think this is the year that changes. You touched on LSU. Depth is a huge concern, I think, for Garrett Runyon, but hey, as long as Ingrid's there, they finished 2nd. They got clipped in Puerto Rico by Arkansas. But as long as Ingrid's in the fold, she had 2 wins in the fall. They're going to be just fine. The team I was a little, you know, higher on in the fall, and now I'm perhaps maybe quickly out on them after one tournament, is Ole Miss in Puerto Rico. Caitlin McNabb, the transfer, has been absolutely dynamite for them. She had a win, 3 other top 7s in the fall. Some other players on that team have to kind of get things going. And, you know, I didn't really look too closely at the scores. I don't know if they were missing anybody. Actually, I could probably look real quickly right now. But
they didn't play well, bottom line.
Yeah.
Not even in the mix.
They had everyone in there. Andre Lignell, T35. Justine Forneau, T69. Natasha Husted, T50. I mean, they even had a couple individuals play in Ellen Hume and Elle Johnson, and they didn't crack the top 25. So it's not like someone was at home saying, man, I would have done better than that. So Yeah, that's a little bit of a alarm sound for Ole Miss, but gosh, this is just like the men's side on the SEC. It's loaded. It could be any one of 6, 7, 8 teams, all the way down to Mississippi State, who we really didn't hear much from in the fall. They got one of the best players in the country in Julio Lopez Ramirez. A&M is really good, especially in the match play format. I picked Auburn, though. I think Anna Davis, she was T27 or so in her college debut in Puerto Rico. I think she figures things out very quickly, making Schofield bounce back, top three finish there. Talk about deep teams and really talented at the top. I mean, it doesn't get much better than Anna Davis and Megan Schofield.
Less than 2 months away, Augusta National Women's Amateur. I know Field announced today. Anything surprising jumping out to you as we'll be back at Augusta here in late March?
Yeah, so I had a chance. I peeked at the field list just before we hopped on at 10 a.m. Eastern time on a Wednesday announcement. But the thing that jumps out is this could be, I think, the strongest field ever. I know Rose is no longer an amateur golfer, so she won't be back to defend her title. But we were talking about this. I believe it's the first time that we've had 43 players commit. So the top 43 eligible players for this event via the World Amateur Golf Ranking all committed. And I think in the fifth year now, the past 4 years, there's always been one or two or a few players in that range that haven't been able to play for whatever reason, whether that was ANA or Chevron or Tsubasa Kajitani just didn't defend her title a couple of years ago. So that jumps out at me. It's loaded. We know it's already one of the premier amateur events, not just in women's golf, but in all amateur golf. We say it all the time. It feels like everything Augusta National touches turns to gold very quickly, and it's going to be fun to get back out there. Will I see you out there, Berko?
I will be there.
Wouldn't miss it.
Absolutely. Well, fun to just sort of spit out the spring, what's happening, what we think might happen, and the good news, we'll do it all again next week right here on College Golf Talk. For Brentley, I'm Berko. We will see you then.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.